right now.
This is
2FM's Game On.
Hello there and good evening. Welcome to the show. It is Friday, November 7th. I'm Shane Dawson, and for the final time, you are listening to Game On. Coming up over the course of the next hour, Alan Colley previews this year's Sports Direct Men's FAI Cup final, while Fergal Brennan joins the football conversation to look forward to this weekend's Premier League action. Jane Mangan has all the latest racing news. We have a chance for one lucky listener to win €400, all thanks to PwC. And we're getting the whole gang together. Marie Crowe and Ruby Walsh will be along to reflect on our favourite moments from Game On here on 2FM. And we want to hear from you, your sporting highlights covered on the show over the years. Get in touch by texting 51552 or message us on WhatsApp 087 187 9200.
This is
2FM's
Game On.
Good evening, all. Good evening, Alan Colley. How's the form?
I'm good, Shane. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very, very well. A lot to get through this evening. I'm very much looking forward to previewing the FAI Cup final. We're going to cross to Adrian Eames at the promotion relegation playoff final as well at Tulka Park very shortly. But first, a couple of news headlines. Shane Lowry's challenge for second Abu Dhabi Championship was dented by back-to-back closing bogeys as he lies three strokes, I should say, off the leaders at the halfway point. Lowry, who won the tournament in 2019, carded a second round 69 to sit on 11 under, with playing partner Tommy Fleetwood and Aaron Rye sharing top spot on the leaderboard. They're two strokes clear of a trio of players on 12 under: South Africa's Richard Stern, England's Andy Sullivan, and Danish Ryder Cup player from 2023, Nicolai Højgaard. Rory McIlroy, six strokes back from the leaders on 8 under after a second successive 68. Tom McKibben remains near the foot of the field despite a decent 69 today. And briefly, football news. Former Treaty United women's manager Sean Russell is the new head coach of Shelburne women's team. Russell helped Treaty to their strongest ever season in the SSE or Tricity Women's Premier Division this year. The Dubliner replaced his own wearing at Tulka Park. Details of his backroom staff will follow at a later date. Competition time.
This is
2FM's Game On.
The PwC All-Star Awards take place at the RDS this evening, and you can watch the awards live on RT1 Television and RTE Player beginning at 7:30. All the country's top GAA football and hurling talent will be there as we honour their excellence, commitment and passion for their sport. And if you can show your excellence on GAA knowledge today, you could be in with a chance to win yourself €400 in cash, all thanks to PwC. If you fancy winning it, simply answer this question. Can you tell us which county has the most players represented on the PwC Hurling All-Stars 2025 team? Is it Tipperary or Kilkenny? Text us now on 51552 with your answer and name. As always, competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for details. And the lucky winner will be announced before the end of today's show.
Game On.
Hurling.
So €400 cash to be won. I do want to pick your brain on last night's Conference League fixtures, but let us cross it. It's very fitting. We've timed this well. And our last ever Game On, I get to throw to a reporter at Tulka Park. I'm very excited about. Adrian Eames is there ahead of Waterford against Bray Wanderers in the promotion relegation playoff final. Adrian, how's Tulka Park?
Very emotional listening to you, Shane. I think the 20 or 30 people that are here at the moment are feeling the anguish in RT in Donnybrook. Is it CC1 or CC3? But anyway, we're getting the vibes.
I'm not one for sentimentality, unless it surrounds Tulka Park, to be fair. There's a big match you're looking forward to, Adrian.
Absolutely. It's the promotion relegation playoff, Bray Wanderers against Waterford. Bray contesting this particular decider for the second year in succession. Of course, 12 months ago, they played out a very entertaining encounter, actually, with Drogheda United at Talla Stadium. Drogheda, though, coming through to win by 3-1. But certainly the Drogheda feathers were ruffled on that particular afternoon. They finished third, Bray Wanderers, in the First Division this season, but came through the playoffs seeing off UCD before accounting for Treaty last weekend with Justin Ferris. I don't know if you saw it, but a spectacular overhead kick late on in the game, in the dying embers of the game at the Athlone Town Stadium, to give Bray this post in the final. So they've got an opportunity to claim Premier Division football. up against Waterford, who of course finished ninth in the Premier Division. A terrible run in terms of their conclusion to the season. They're back in familiar territory, Waterford. This is their fourth relegation promotion playoff in 5 years. They're under the interim boss, Matt Lawler. They've had their issues, of course, in the closing stages of the season with John Coleman and Danny Ventry departing. Matt Lawler back in for a stint there to try and just guide them into Premier Division football next season. They finished the season actually with just one win in their final 12 games, but of course they have very much a player bang in form in the shape of Porrick Almond, who notched 14 goals in the league this season and finished as the Golden Boot winner. So it's a fascinating tie. Bray will fancy their chances. Waterford, you'd feel though, given their Premier Division pedigree, should have enough, but who knows? It's a one-off tie. Extra time and penalties possible here at Talca Park. Kick-off is at 7:45, and the Bray Wanderers players have just arrived off the team bus and they're just walking the pitch, which looks very, very impressive this evening. It looks in excellent condition, Shane.
Brilliant. Great stuff. Adrian Eames reporting from the grand old monument to football in Dublin City. That is Talca Park. 51552 is the text number. Get your highlights in. Marie and Ruby will be joining us later. Alan's going to stick around as well. Hi, Shane. Very sad to hear Game On is coming to an end. Thanks for all the fantastic entertainment for the last 10 plus years. Best wishes for the future. Tell Alan I said hello. Frank Sutton.
Or the one and only Frank. How could the show end without a text from Frank Sutton? I'm surprised I didn't get a letter as well, Frank. Loves to send me a letter and I do enjoy reading every one of them, Frank. And yes, you've been a listener a long time. I think I'm the longest serving one here, Shane.
You are. I have to get that mention in as well.
But
12 years, it's good innings.
But Frank has been an avid follower, texter, supporter, if you like. So it's much appreciated, Frank.
That's Frank Sutton, not Frank from Sutton, that you found out. You found out for early doors. Right, let's.
It's not the end of me either, Frank. You'll be hopefully seeing and hearing me plenty as well going forward.
I'm not one for sentimentality, as I said. We will be reflecting on everything a little bit later. Waterford against Bray. Would you be siding with the current Premier Division team, or can Bray Wanderers strike a surprise?
Normally you would, Shane, and normally I would have a very strong view, as you know, one way or the other. But this is actually so hard to call because, as Adrian said there, in terms of you look at their last nine games, especially Waterford, one win out of nine, and Bray have actually been very inconsistent themselves despite the fact they've done well in the three games in the playoff. But their last nine in the league was four wins and five defeats, so you're kind of looking for a bit of momentum going into this game. I suppose Bray's could look to the fact that they have three wins on the bounce through the playoff system, and normally you would kind of always tend to favour the Premier Division side because we always speak about the gulf in class from the First Division to the Premier. But this is very, very hard to call. So
rainy night as well, anything can happen.
It's cup football, it's all on the night, to winner takes all. So yeah, I would kind of give Bray a good chance. Normally I'd always, as I said, side strongly with the Premier Division team, but I'm going to give Bray a decent chance, and I also had a couple of years out in Bray myself, so I'd like to see them back in the Premier maybe. Yeah,
always a good away day. Out dart line, anywhere in the dart line or anywhere near a train station, it's always a good away day. Let us reflect on last night's Conference League results. Shelburne beaten at Atala Stadium 1-0 by Drita. James Norris sent off early doors for Joey O'Brien's side. Shamrock Rovers, 1-1 draw. It could have, perhaps should have been all 3 points. A very controversial penalty. Danny Grant, a judge to have handled the ball after a VAR decision. Very frustrating for Shamrock Rovers fans and League of Ireland fans. Before I get your thoughts, let's hear from Shamrock Rovers head coach Stephen Bradley.
Yeah, it should have been all three. It's an awful decision from the referees, even though the fact that he looked at us so long meant he was looking for something, you know. It's obviously hit his hand, but we've been told at the start of the year when it's the same player and he goes to clear it and it's in a natural position, it's not a penalty. And he gives it. It was an awful decision. The players have been robbed of 3 points tonight.
Despite that obvious disappointment, you must be extremely proud of your players for that performance tonight.
Yeah, extremely proud. You asked them to come to this arena and play with personality and character, understanding at times we're going to have to suffer without the ball. You've seen the squad was light tonight. We made a lot of changes throughout the game, which you don't usually do at half time, obviously with Sunday in mind. But I thought to a man, they showed tremendous character and personality, and unlucky not to get 3 points. They should have got 3 points.
And despite those changes, as you mentioned, the shape and the discipline amongst the team in and out of possession, excellent all night.
Yeah, they were brilliant. I don't think we gave up too much near the end. There was a few blocked shots, which again is quite normal. You're playing against a good team with top players, so that's quite normal. But never felt in any real danger. Players were really comfortable in what they were doing, and I'm just gutted for them because they deserve to leave here with 3 points. I know a point is positive. gives us the opportunity now to win two games, and I think you'll qualify with that 7 points. So it gives us a great opportunity now, but it's just disappointing for them.
To hear the Hoops fans at the end of the match there in the corner in such a loud arena like this is absolutely excellent, and the chance where go and win the Cup, Stephen. So big, all eyes now switch to Sunday.
Yeah, incredible from them, because I know they've had a difficult day today. I know they've been messed around on the way to the game, and unfortunately, hopefully the club can speak to UEFA and get to the bottom of that, because that's not acceptable, our fans being treated like that. But they come here, and the noise of them in that ground, there was 25,000, it felt like 60,000, and you could still hear our fans. Incredible, and a massive thank you to them. And now we ask them to show up on Sunday in the numbers and help us try and go and achieve a double, and that's the aim now.
Stephen Bradley speaking to the Shamrock Rovers media team in Greece. Before we look ahead to the Cup final, obviously Shamrock Rovers in Cork City, Stephen Bradley understandably aggrieved with that penalty decision.
Yeah, you can actually hear in his voice how disappointed he is, and I would agree totally with him, Shane. I thought it was a really, really poor decision. And when you think of, I suppose, everything that was against them last night in terms of being an away match in a hostile atmosphere against the top quality opposition, to go so long as they did in the game with the lead and to be caught out with a poor decision like that from the referee. And again, Stephen was explaining it very well there. The fact that he spent so long, like I knew looking at it straight away, that Danny Grant was being fouled initially. Then his arm is up, but it's raised because he's trying to clear the ball with his left foot. And it's a natural kind of reaction that your other arm would come up. The fact that the referee then went over to the television screen and spent so long at it, I couldn't believe the length of time he was actually reviewing this decision, and then for him to give the penalty. So
similar with the Shamrock Rovers with John McGovern, that even went over to review it and stuck with the decision, which is quite unusual.
It is very unusual, yeah, absolutely, because normally when they're sent to the monitor it's for a reason. But it was just the length of time he took on a chain, to be honest with you. So absolutely, look, Stephen, when the dust settles, he'll be delighted with the performance and how well the players. He also alluded to the fact that it gives themselves a chance to maybe qualify with two wins, so the point could prove very, very vital come the end of the campaign, if you like. So he'll be delighted with that, and now all eyes switch firmly to Sunday and the Cup final. But I also think as well, Shane, there was a really controversial decision in the Shelburne match as well. So I think both our clubs have been caught out last night by two very poor decisions, and that being the James Norris red card.
Poor decision?
I thought it was a poor decision. I did. And the reason being, Shane, yes, when you review it and Europe and when you slow everything down, of course he stands on the player. Everybody can see that clearly. But there's no force. People, the things they look for in that.
There's no malice.
No malice, no excessive force in the challenge. And for me, that's a lack of an understanding from a referee in not recognising just exactly what has taken place. He's just purely pointing to the fact that a foot is resting on somebody else's foot and it looks bad than what it actually is. And instead of understanding. And I knew straight away.
I understand that the ball got away from him, and if you've ever played football, you know what it's like, and you're trying to just grab at it. He didn't lunge in.
No,
yes, his
no
studs,
force,
his studs make contact with his ankle, and when you do slow it down frame by frame, it looks bad.
But again, that's where I'd love to see a referee. That's where I feel, and you often hear this, the letter of the law, but you need to have a feel for the game and an understanding as well, Shane, of exactly what has taken place in that instance. And he had no understanding of what had taken place in that instance. I felt so sorry for the kid Norris, because it potentially could be his last game. He's facing suspension now. He's obviously on loan. I think he's done really well for Shells. It also affects Shells massively. And these are the repercussions that will catch clubs out in terms of the financial earnings and the money going forward, Shane. That could have a huge detrimental effect on their campaign, because obviously they went on to lose the game. With 11 players, you're thinking it's a great chance to win the game. So I thought it was a poor decision. And again, as I said, everybody can see that his foot is resting on the other player's foot. I've no issue with that. But it's the fact that there's no force, no malice, no intent to even hurt the player. So I thought it was a poor one.
An unfortunate end that you would imagine that is Shelburne's hopes of progressing to the knockout stages, considering they have Alkmaar, Palace and Celje to come 1 point. That draw against Hacken, they were unfortunate in Shkendia, last minute on goal, Paddy Barrett, and then the deflected goal as well.
Yeah, it's kind of
Lewis Temple.
It's kind of flipped in the sense that Shelburne had their easier matches at the first half of the. We're now out of the three difficult ones, where Shamrock Rovers have obviously had.
And they could well have 5 or 7 points. And that isn't with. That's genuinely being impartial and unbiased that they could.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And they'll probably feel hard done by that they don't, to be honest with you. But they've only themselves to blame maybe in a couple of those instances.
They do. I'm going to miss out on a couple of texts. We're going to go a bit rogue and just read out a couple of texts as we go on. I'm going to miss listening to Game On each evening. I've learned so much from your various interviews and insights into different sports. I started following the Irish women's football and women's Six Nations from you guys. I love the banter between you all. What am I going to do? That's from Annette in Donegal. Missing you guys already. Well, we're here till 7. There's no need to be missing us already.
That's a lovely text.
That is Annette from Donegal. And we will keep across all of that. Thanks for all the memories. I'm a doctor and finish work around 6 p.m. Game On made my drives home always bearable, especially after a rubbish day at work. Thank you from Sharuk with that message. Right, Sunday, FAI Cup final. Shamrock Rovers against Cork City. Shamrock Rovers, understandably, favourites. They're looking to do the double, first time in near 40 years. How do you see this one playing out?
Yeah, again, something similar like I was saying about, I suppose, the Bray Waterford one. Straight away, you will point to the fact that obviously Shamrock Rovers have just won the league. They're so dominant in doing that. Cork have just been relegated, bottom of the league, no away wins all season. But if you actually drill down into the numbers, Shane, and there was an excellent piece on the website yesterday from a game of two halves, and he delves deep into the numbers. You look at, I suppose, Shamrock Rovers in terms of their dominance, and we I suppose our eyes are telling us when we watch them in the games, they're the best team, and we can see that. But the points tally that they have is actually not majorly dominant. If you actually drill down to the numbers, their points per game total was 1.83. Only 5 previous champions have won the league with a lower figure, and we're going right back to 47-48 with Drumcondra, Cork Hibs 70-71, Cork City 92-93, Dundalk 94-95, and Shelburne last year. So these are the kind of things that I think Ger Nash has to kind of, I suppose, focus on in terms of allowing his players to think that we do have a really good chance. They're not coming up to Dublin to make up the numbers. They'll feel as though they can win the game. Also, the two games they've played against Shamrock Rovers this year, at home they drew 1-1. Unfortunately for them, the two games away from home, they've lost 4-1, both of them. And their away form is a slight concern.
And it is a big difference going from a hostile Turner's Cross into the vast expanse of Aviva Stadium.
Yeah, and that's where they've struggled all year, Cork City, in any ground. So it's going to be very difficult. And obviously, as you say, the Aviva Stadium. Now, I think they have a lot of travelling support coming with them as well. There's talk of over maybe 15,000, which would be great. Also, defensively, they haven't been the best, Shamrock Rovers, allowing 0.9 goals per game. This was the most conceded by a title-winning team since their own team in 2010, which conceded 0.9. It's the third most of the summer era. So a lot of these stats as well, which is, I think, why the piece is really, really good, Shane. It also throws in the caveat that now we're in an era, I suppose, where it's all full-time teams, so it is more competitive. But I don't think Shamrock Rovers have been as dominant as people are suggesting that they have. And the fact that they've lost 4 of their last 5 league games as well, not exactly great form. You could point to last night was a draw again, not a victory. I know that's obviously very stiff opposition last night. And I think they've only 2 wins in their last 9 matches in all competitions. So these are the things, as I say, of course, they're the favourite, Shamrock Rovers. Of course, everybody's expecting them to win the game. But I don't think it's as clear cut as what maybe people might feel.
I bumped into a very old school Shamrock Rovers fan last night who said he wants Rovers to lose the cup so it means Bows miss out in Europe. That's
that's hardcore rivalry.
That's Milltown stuff, I think.
That's hardcore stuff, yeah.
Right, as Owen Doyle, I think, made a point in his piece on the Irish Sport website, important Cork don't concede early and just stay in the game, be resilient even if it is.
Yeah, and the performance that Dale Point as well, again, it's at home, is the one that obviously against St. Pat's they were excellent, Shane. If they can replicate anything like that on Sunday, I think they've a chance. Hopefully for our sake in terms of neutrals and a spectacle, and it's our showpiece day, you'd love to think that. But obviously people are fancying Shamrock Rovers with good reason.
Understandably so. You can listen to live commentary of the Sports Direct FAI Cup Final, Shamrock Rovers against Cork City, on Sunday Sport on RT Radio 1, or you can watch Alan and the crew on RT 2 Television and the RT.
See, Frank, I'm not gone yet, Frank.
Is Game On being replaced in another sports programme? Inside Sport, RT Radio 1, Monday from 6, our own Marie Crowe, Jackie Hurley, Andy Ennis Middleton, Andy Ennis from Middleton. I suspect that text may be. The reporting on all sports and not just the main sports was excellent. The banter between your various presenters was really great. I'm really going to miss the 6 to 7 slot, but as I mentioned, there will be your nightly fix of sport. Different frequency, but the same passion for sport in that one. Fergal Brennan is on the line to chat Premier League. And Fergal, let us begin our conversation. I have the fixtures in front of me, looking at the big one on Sunday. Manchester City against Liverpool, rampaging Haaland, taking on the champions. How are Liverpool going to about to try and shackle Erling Haaland is a question I've asked in this show many times, Fergal.
I think Arne Slot will be asking the same question and hoping to figure out an answer in the next 24 to 48 hours. Manchester City have been excellent in recent weeks, kind of matching their Premier League and the Champions League form together to really put themselves back into the conversation. Ridiculously, maybe at the start of the campaign, some people were looking at it and thinking it's Arsenal and Liverpool, that'll be a straight fight. City a little bit in transition, obviously a lot of change over the summer, but they're right in the middle of it. And now they've got an opportunity to kind of send a bit of a message, not just to Liverpool, but to Arsenal above them as well, and say, don't forget how successful we're being. Don't forget how successful our manager is. We are right in there. From Liverpool's perspective, it's a very tricky one to call. I saw a great stat this morning, which was that Jurgen Klopp won his first three Premier League games as Liverpool manager against Pep Guardiola. Arne Slot's won 2 from 2 last season, so he's going to try and match that at the weekend. But it'll be no easy feat. As you mentioned, Erling Haaland, he's in red-hot form. He seems to have hit some sort of new level. I don't know whether somehow something's been unlocked in him where defenders just can't deal with him again. Everything he touches ends up on the back of the net. And Liverpool have obviously improved in the last couple of weeks. Two massive results against Aston Villa and Real Madrid. But defensively, there are still a couple of concerns, particularly for Ibrahima Konate. If Haaland pulls across onto him to try and target him rather than Virgil van Dijk, I think that could be the battle that will decide this one on Sunday afternoon.
Time is against us. We have to get to Racing and Jane, and we do have a big highlight slot with Marie and Ruby coming up. So I'm just going to bounce on, Alan, to another match. Granit Xhaka was never the most popular figure at Arsenal, but has been a revelation at Bayer Leverkusen, where he won the Bundesliga title undefeated, and now Sunderland, where he's adored by fans for perfectly complimenting the youth in the team. The league leaders will go to the Stadium of Light, wary of their former captain, who will surely be out to prove a point. Can Sunderland trouble Arsenal, Alan Cawley?
I think at home they can trouble them, but can they get a victory? I'm not so sure, Shane. They've had such a brilliant start to the season. Xhaka obviously been pivotal in that, watching the game even Monday night. He was so instrumental in them getting back into the game, scored the goal as well, despite the fact they took a deflection. But more interestingly enough for me, Shane, was his interview after the match, and he spoke to Dave Jones and Jamie Carragher just about the standards that he's looking to set. He's only new to the club. And I thought that was a real good insight in terms of the impact that he has had. When he was asked the question as to why they started the game so poorly on Monday evening, he spoke about the fact that they had a really poor training session before, the day before, and that it kind of followed through into the game. And you often hear managers say that, or any clubs you've been involved in terms of replicating what's gone on the training field into a match, and none more so than if you have a poor day, that'll become a poor day on the Saturday as well. So it's not often you hear players give you that kind of insight, but he was very honest in that regard. Said they discussed it at half time and came out much better in the second half. So I think he's had a huge impact in terms of the profile of player that he is, the status that he has in the game, and that's obviously a huge influence. I say not only on the players, young players or inexperienced players in that group, but also on the manager, who's very much inexperienced at that level. So I think he's had a huge impact. But you know how I feel about Arsenal this year, Shane. I just think they're an absolute powerhouse. They can do a bit of everything. I love the fact that they're so miserly in defence as well. And people might point to the fact that, oh, the old saying 1-0 to the Arsenal, or it's not great to watch. They can do a bit of everything, but I love the fact that they are miserly defensively, because all great teams, that's your starting point, and they have that platform, they have that foundation, and then to have superstars all over the pitch that can win them games. So I think it's going to take a really good team to stop Arsenal this year.
Okay, I'm aware I'm rattling through the fixtures here. We're going to end our football conversation with yourself, Fergal. The turning the corner derby, Spurs against Manchester United, the lunchtime kickoff tomorrow. What excites you about this fixture, Fergal?
I don't think Ruben will be so brave to say, lads, it's Tottenham. I don't think he'll have that much confidence in the way that United have kind of turned their own corner. But as we've mentioned in the last couple of weeks, they have improved. They've solidified. They obviously had to kind of dig deep to get a point last time out. But As for Tottenham, I just think the whole project that Thomas Frank has brought in, I don't think United would necessarily be jealous, but they will be looking at it and going, here is a manager who instantly has gone in, got his ideas across, he's getting results, he's getting positivity, might not be as exciting as obviously Postecoglou previously, but as Alan has alluded to many, many times, he's doing what Postecoglou didn't do, which is winning games in the Premier League and making them competitive to finish much, much higher up than they did last season. I suppose one little glimmer for United is that if Spurs lose, that'd be four home Premier League defeats on the run. No other team would have lost more at home in the Premier League this season. So there is a little bit of a weakness in that Tottenham team. So sit on the fence and go for a draw.
Okay, great stuff. Fergal Brennan, thank you for your contribution this evening and indeed over the months and years. You're an absolute gentleman. We are going to head for a break and Jane Mangan is standing by at the chat racing. A couple of more texts. 51552 is the number. I'm not a sporting person, but I have learned so much from you guys and the four of us here in the family. Really enjoy your show while making the dinner. I've listened to Game On for the last decade while variously cooking, feeding the children, cleaning up the kitchen. You all feel like my friends now and I'm devastated to miss the great and always interesting sport updates. We've all learned so much and I now follow the Irish male and female football teams, the Premier League and the golf, none of which I was aware of previously. You've opened up a whole week's work up to me. Thank you, says Jen in Loud. Great to hear two lads who are passionate about Irish football and give the sport the coverage it deserves. All the best, says Kieran in Meath.
Can I say something quick? I know you're quick.
Yeah, no,
time,
you're
Shane, but see the text that there, it's actually lovely to hear because sometimes we be in here you think there's nobody listening and it's actually lovely to hear those really nice texts. So that's making me a bit emotional, Shane. Fair
well,
play.
There'll be more emotion to come with Ruby and Marie a little bit later. But it is great, even the non-sporting fans that we've converted. If there's any League of Ireland converts, get in. 51552. We had Alex Denning and David Kennedy on the show last week. Brilliant chat with the guys, and we've been keeping abreast of their results. And I can say the Alex Denning Charles Young pairing, driving for the SJM Theodore Racing Team, had race wins yesterday and today to top the standings in the Super Trofeo Asia with 8 wins out of 12 this season. They go up against the top teams from the European and US standings over 4 races in the next 2 days at Misano in Italy. So the very best of luck to the pairing and indeed to Alex Denning, the South Dubliner he was in, and one for the future but one for now as well. And he's targeting Le Mans as well, some endurance racing as opposed to the F1 route. Right, short break to take. We've Marie Crowe, we've Ruby Welch, Alan Colley sticking around. 51552 is the text number. Get your highlights in. Jane Mangan standing by the chat racing.
RT 2 FM. Game on.
Racing.
Now, time to chat racing. Jane Mangan is on the line. Jane, how's the form?
Very well. Despite the gloomy weather, the rain has come, which will facilitate the return of many of these very good jumpers that we want to see in the next week or two.
Okay, before we look ahead at racing this weekend and even get carried away and looking ahead at the jump racing over the next few weeks, let us reflect on a couple of midweek treats because there were some good performances from both Ilaité Tomp and Spindleberry.
There was. Midweek treats at Clonmel. Clonmel Oil Chase Day is typically their best day of their season and the rain came just in time for these good horses to run. Spindleberry, obviously a very good novice from last year. She beat the geldings in the Willow Warm Gold Cup at Fairy House last Easter, and she remained unbeaten over fences with an emphatic display to beat the quite talented Bioluminescence in the mare's chase. She won as she liked, and maybe is setting herself up for some tilts at the geldings once again in open company. And a little bit later on in the Clonmel Oil, Ilaité Tomp, it was a small field, Gentleman de Me probably underperformed, but it was the manner in which this horse won. We saw him once last year when he downed John Bon at Sandown at the end of the year. He was awesome that day. And William Mullins indicated after that performance at the end of last season that he was thinking about the Tingle Creek. Well, after a seasonal debut like we saw in Clonmel on Thursday, you would have to think that the Tingle Creek at Sandown is made for him. William Mullins won the race in 2016 with Under So. He has been out of luck since. And this guy, he's just got a lot of class. He's been under the radar for whatever reason. He's a multiple grade one winning novice chaser. And now I think he's a horse that has to be taken very seriously as a possible champion chaser.
How much are you relishing that Ilaité Tomp, John Bon, head to head, kind of square off in a possible Tingle Creek?
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to getting to Cheltenham next week for the November meeting, where hopefully we'll see John Bon make his season reappearance in the Schlauer Chase, usually his starting point. And then if he does that well, it would hopefully mean that the two of them would clash. But these are all just things whetting the appetite for the big clashes that are to come over the season.
Cannot wait. No majors this weekend, Jane, but domestically there is some nice National Hunt racing from both Goran Park and Naas. Goran tomorrow and Naas on Sunday. So County Kilkenny tomorrow, 8 races. It all begins just before midday. What catches your eye here?
Even in the very first race tomorrow, I think Langtree Lady catches the eye. A high-class hurdler for Henry de Bromhead. His yard couldn't be in better form. She runs over fences for the first time. She definitely catches my eye in the Mayor's Beginners in the first race. You've got a couple of maiden hurdles there with some exciting types. Mark Lane for Barry Connell in one division. Harty Cup for Robert Tyner in another. You've got the prospect of Tim Toe for Henry de Bromhead as well. These are all coming in here with lofty reputations, and some of them will be intact, more of them won't after they appear at Goran Park. And on Sunday, I'll be at Naas. I think I'll be most looking forward to the Brown Lad, the handicap hurdle at 2:30. It's a 2.5 mile handicap hurdle. And unusually, we have Spillane's Tower in there. Of course, 160 plus rated chaser. He reverts back to hurdles just to get his season started, but he competes off a mark of 130. So theoretically, he is well handicapped, and I think that's a good place for him to start. It's not a simple race. It's a valuable pot, but he's the one to beat in that. But the feature race of the day is the Grade 3 Barberstown Castle Chase. It's the Grade 3 over 2 miles. Champ Kylie in the pocket. Ile Atlantique only by night and Gaelic Art. Not a big field. One thing to note, that only by night has been purchased by Rob Coore since we saw her last season, since she was agonisingly defeated when second in the Arkle Chase. Ile Atlantique was very disappointing last season, falling and unseating in his last two starts. In the pocket, again, you get the suspicion that he's better than we've seen from him over fences. And Champ Kylie, of course, a Grade 1 winning horse in the past as well. So that's the Barberstown Castle. Might not be Grade 1s, Shane, but we might see Grade 1 horses.
Okay, we will be keeping an eye on all of that in both Kilkenny and Kildare. And of course, we'll be cheering on Spillane's Tower. We're all big fans of Spillane's Tower here at Game On. For now, Jane Mangan, thank you as always for taking the calls throughout the months, throughout the years, but even today. We much appreciate it. It's been great chatting. Lots to look forward to this weekend.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Very welcome back to the show. You are listening to the final airing of Game On. 51552 is the text number. WhatsApp 087 187 9200. Sorry to hear the end of the Game On show. We'll miss all the analysis and insight from the various pundits and presenters from the show. Always look forward to the slot from 6 to 7 to hear previews and reviews and hearing our very own Sligo representative, says Breen in Sligo.
Ah, Breen, baby, I love
there's it. There's a lot of the Alan Colley fan club. Ah, lads, my favourite sports radio show for years. 6 to 7, 5 times every week. Where will I hear Alan Colley now? At Sligo Rovers. Thanks, boys. Pat O'Brien in Shannon Town. And I'm going to have to check your phone if you're carrying a few burners here, to be honest. I'll miss the show, lads. I listen every evening and on Fridays. I leave early for Tolka at 6 so I can listen to you on the way down and don't get out of my car until the show is over. Myself and my son's ritual before the evening's games, Mick and Jamie in Finglas. Thanks for the years of pure sporting entertainment. It was great to hear Alan and Hugh back together again for one last time. Alan, I owe you a box of hunky dories for all your service. Best of luck with your future endeavours, lads. Keith Walton. Marie Crowe and Ruby Walsh are on the line, but I feel Marie Crowe and Ruby are redundant here when Alan Colley is
here. It's all
about
Alan.
No. It's a team effort. A team effort. And we've had some good times. Great times. And hopefully we'll have many more.
It was, but I couldn't. Like, I nearly actually hung up there when I heard you saying you were getting emotional. I was thinking the man has an emotional body in, bone in his body.
You missed during the break there. He was talking to us about how he's learned to use a drill and makes IKEA furniture. The off-air stuff is what people have really missed out on.
Yeah, if people heard that stuff, Ruby. IKEA. What do you think of IKEA, Ruby?
No, we're not going down that route.
I am fond of IKEA. I think it's therapeutic.
No, I'll tell you now what IKEA is. IKEA should close their doors because they're codding people.
Okay, IKEA is so simple.
Just simple. Just follow the instructions.
But it takes eight hours.
It does exactly.
It's supposed to only take a half an hour.
And we wonder why there won't be any more Game On.
if we're not going off air, we're going to be taken off the air now by IKEA's lawyers. You're a part of the original gang, Alan, 12 years ago.
Yeah. It seems like a long time now, Shane, because I still kind of see myself as a young fella, but maybe the years are ticking on now. But yeah, 12 years, Hugh, Gary Murphy, Andrew O'Connor, Robbie Irwin started the whole thing off when I was here as well. John Farrell, Adrian Eames. Ronan since. So all the lads have kind of helped and contributed all over the years. It's been great fun, great times. As I say, I absolutely love it. I still have the same energy right now as I had 12 years ago, Shane. Love sport, love the show, and I love the fact that in the early days, I suppose, we were dipping into everything, and I'm a lover of all sports, and I love to contribute, and not an expert on them all, but I love to have an opinion on most of them. And obviously, since yourselves have got involved, Marie, Ruby was one of my heroes when I loved the National Hunt Race, and so to be sitting here debating and discussing all sorts, and despite the fact that he used to slag me a lot, I always enjoyed that. Then Shane, you got involved yourself, and great times as well, because big League of Ireland fan like myself, so we had plenty in common from day one. And a great energy about you as well. So yeah, I'll be sad. I'll miss my Monday nights and Friday nights, but as I said to Frank Sutton earlier on, it's not the end of me, Shane. I'm only beginning here. I'm only beginning.
At least he's telling the truth anyway, Shane. That's... he likes to have an opinion.
He does. I have to say though, one of the most asked questions I've had since I started working with Ruby is, what's Ruby Walsh really like?
And tell us what you want to tell them.
And your opinion, Marie?
And I tell people, he's not as grumpy as he comes across. He's actually really nice, and nobody believes me.
No, they won't. It's all part of the image, Marie. Don't ruin it. Don't ruin it on me.
I've never come across a man with more dry wit than Ruby.
Although
Walsh.
I have to say this, Ruby, and saying it's our last show, it's quite fitting that I'm going to get a little dig there, maybe. Well, not a dig, but the crack that we have. I listen to Ted. I think Ted is the best of the Walshes. I listen to Ted during the week. Green is me granny. It was unbelievable, the interview we had.
So I regularly hear, Alan, you wouldn't be the first person to tell me that one.
So we started the show 2013, is that 12 years ago?
Yeah.
Damien O'Mara, you mentioned Hugh, Andrew O'Connor, and then yourself, Marie, Ruby, and Dunica.
Dunica was here as well.
So we had a 2-hour show then, Marie.
Yeah, until COVID put an end to that. I used to come in actually just and do slots like Alan did with Hugh about 8 years ago, and then Hugh moved on to New Pastures as well and started doing more television, and then I ended up taking over about 7 years ago and have been doing it pretty much every day of the week since, until Shane came along and we started to share it a little bit more. But we were on the desk, so people might not know this, but Shane and I operate the desk, so we drive the desk. I'm going to miss that a bit, actually. But it's been great. It's been probably the most fun job that I've ever had. It never felt like work coming in the evenings. It was just great crack, brilliant company, stories, sports, text messages, listeners. But we've been brilliant, and it's been lovely to work with everybody.
Well, I'd echo that in the sense that we've become friends and pals as well. So, like we're saying there, 12 years, a long time. But it doesn't even feel like that, in terms of the fact that if you're doing something that you love and you're really happy with, it doesn't feel, it's never felt like work. Never once.
I feel like a blow in there when you're on about 12 years. I'm only here about 5, maybe 6. But
well, if you're a blow in, I don't know how, what you class me, really.
Listen to these two. But, and the show has evolved. Like, I must say, I love Monday, having a rant or a natter about every highlight or low light that we had. But I think we did some brilliant interviews, Marie, in COVID, when everybody had time and you could actually get people on the phone and get people to come on air. And we spoke to some incredible sports people during lockdown when there was nothing else happening. And I must say, even in lockdown, we were one of the lucky people that could work, and it was brilliant.
I'm with you on that, Ruby. I'd say we were probably the only two people that actually enjoyed lockdown, and Ronan, the producer, probably did as well, because we were bouncing over and back all the time about ideas. And as Ruby said, it was the one time sports people had time. They didn't have a fixture coming up. They didn't have pressure. They didn't have their club shouting in their ear. So they were able to give us that time. And I think pretty much anybody, Ruby, well, particularly you, because you had such great pull, but we just got some of the most unbelievable interviews and people just to chat to us. And, you know, we talking about ones that we remember, and some of the ones in lockdown were the ones that really, really stuck with me. Liverpool won the league during that time as well. So who did you dip into in that context, book, Ruby?
I rang Cheltenham Racecourse and I got Kenny Dalglish's daughter to get her dad to come on. I knew Marie was a huge Kenny Dalglish fan, so Kenny was very kind and came on. But we had different people that I had met different times. I think we'd Lee Westwood, Michael Owen, loads of different Irish sports people. But I remember the night we'd spoke to Pat Horgan, and I remember hanging up that night thinking, lockdown's going to be a long time for him.
he really struggled when there was no hurling. So it was, he was probably the one person from all of that time, because we had different people on every night, that was really, really finding it hard to almost, and he's probably finding it hard now actually, because he's since retired, but just not to have that routine of going out just hurling, pucking, playing the game that he loved. And Ruby, you were trying to find positives in this situation and trying to give him a bit of a lift.
I felt like a counsellor. I felt like I had to lift this man. And maybe there was loads of people like that in lockdown, but I remember ringing Marie that night and saying, Jesus, like, there's somebody, there's the other side of lockdown. You really spoke to someone that felt alone and was missing life.
Yeah, and there was no light probably at the end of the tunnel at that stage. I'm
sure that was the hardest part. Wasn't
yeah,
it
when
people?
We didn't know when we were going to be back on, or when the sports and the fixtures were going to be back on, and then things like the rugby league came back in Australia, and we all, because we'd nothing else, became experts in that. Yeah, yeah.
Everything.
So yeah, it was great. It was the one time that people wanted to talk to us. So.
But that's what I loved about it too. Like, even all the different sports, like I suppose because you're working on it, feeling the obligation to watch it, like, rather than making an excuse to watch it. But like, even watching Tour de France and watching Sam Bennett winning the green jersey, and like, be sat here glued to the sprint finishes, like, with even Ben Healy this time around, all the different sports that you had to take more of an interest in. I think I loved it.
Yeah. Honestly.
There was one thing we did fail at though.
Go on.
Keeping ourselves in a job.
when Ruby got involved, and me and Marie discussed this a few times, I was cocksure that we'd get him out to a League of Ireland match.
We failed.
And
we
said it more times, and he still hasn't. We still haven't converted him. So
what are you doing on Sunday for the cup final, Ruby?
I'm afraid I can't go on Sunday to the cup final. But I did bring Gemma to Tala to watch the Ireland women's play.
Yeah.
Well, that's a start.
That's getting to Tala Stadium.
And found his way back home again.
I must say, I loved it. I thought this is just so handy and so easy to get in and out of. Yeah, it was an eye opener.
One thing that for me was really memorable was the connection that you gave us to racing as well, Ruby. So particularly around Cheltenham, you were over there. So every day when at Cheltenham, you would take a call just at the end of the race day. There might have been one or two races left, but just to be able to chat to you and break down everything that you had seen that day and get your insight was pretty amazing. But I think when Rachel Blackmore had that year in 2022, I think it was, and broke all the glass ceilings and the records and the Gold Cup and all, for me that was one that really was memorable, probably because of my interest in women's sport, but more, I think even more so just the fact that it was the most amazing achievement. I don't know if we'll ever see it again. Your dad Ted told me that we probably won't, but to see a woman at that level and achieve so much, and then for you to bring us so close to it as well, Ruby, was really special.
And that was amazing. And it was the lockdown Cheltenham, so it was 21 that she won the champion hurdle in Honeysuckle. But because we were all, anyone that was there from an Irish point of view, like, it was basically in a camp, so she was in the same hotel, but we were able to get her on the game on live that night. Like, that was, again, lockdown brought it about, and people had time but nothing to do. We were very lucky. So many people, and I would have been guilty of it when I was competing. Like, so you get a phone call, and it was usually Robbie Irwin coming home on a Saturday night when you take a call. Like, you'd nearly be dodging the phone, and Barry Geraghty would be sitting in the seat in front of me, and he wouldn't be answering either. Like, and when you get on the other side of the phone, you realise how annoying it is when people don't answer phones. And that was brilliant about WhatsApp. You knew people would read your message.
Do you think on that, Ruby, as you said, from sitting on the other side, because I think that's where, like, obviously we're on discussing the sport all the time, but just in terms of the sports people themselves make themselves available, I think that happens more in Ireland than it does in other countries.
It probably does, but there's times too, and I can see both sides of that coin. You don't know what mood someone's in. Like, they might have won something, but you really don't know what sort of pressure they're under. And when people are in good humour, they tend to take the call. And, you know, so I stop ringing people. I text them now and always put on the end of it, there is no hassle either way. It's your own call.
Myself and Ronan had a great day down at the Irish Open in Lahinch. We did an OB from there. I think it was 2019. Ronan's...
Yeah, he's nodding along.
Yeah, he agrees. The sun was splitting the rocks down in Lahinch, and we did the whole programme from there. And it was one of those days, again, where people wanted to talk to us. And Shane Lowry spoke to us on the course, Davy Fitz, Keane Lynch, and we had an absolute ball down there. It was brilliant. And
one of the OBs, we used to do the one down in Punchestown. I met Alex Ferguson, I did down there.
They were great days.
Ruby's buddy.
There's a couple of texts coming in I do want to get to on Twitter. Fantastic show, folks. Never let the standards drop over 12 years. Always great coverage of all sports and a bit of humour thrown in. The show will be sadly missed. Up Armagh, says Garrett. We'll miss the show, folks. Have listened for years and has helped me get through many a bus journey home. Have never texted in before. So thanks for all the sporting insights and passion over the years from all of the team, says Owen. Great to have Marie and Ruby on for final programme. They are really great. And yes, COVID was superb from interview point of view. Mm-hmm. The show has been great. And that's a text in from earlier. The show has been great. Andy Ennis again, and yes, from Middleton. Come on, blowing from Dublin.
I love the fact that he even clarified a few things.
And a Leinster fan. So thank you for clarifying that. That's my Frank from Sutton or Frank Sutton moment in that regard. Interviews, Marie, you've outlined so many highlights from yourself. And Ruby, you mentioned meeting Alex Ferguson. Ruby, what else stands out for?
I loved to be involved in sport for the 2020 Summer Olympics. I thought it was class to come on every night to talk about, 24, sorry, to talk about everything that was happening. Like from Mona McSherry and Daniel Whiff and Kelly Harrington, Reese McClenaghan, Paula Donovan, Fintan McCarthy, even Radish Adelecki, Sophie Becker, Phil Healy and Charlie Mozzie. I thought, from a sporting point of view, that Olympics was just class. And we were only here in Dublin talking about it on the radio. But I thought from an Irish sporting point of view, that was as good as it got.
Yeah, because we'd something every single day as well. Yeah, there was excitement different. All the time.
Yeah. What they were achieving and what they were winning. It was incredible.
I got to interview my dad after Six Mile Bridge won the county title for the second time. That was pretty cool. I think you were there as well, Ruby. So
I was, yeah.
Yeah, we were doing our county final roundup and we gave him a shout there a few years back and that was class now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, because without him I would have had no interest in sports. Well, it would have been extremely limited. So
everything came full circle.
Yeah, so that was really, really great to actually be able to talk to him a little bit about what he gave us as children growing up and then his own sporting achievements and Six Mile Bridge as well.
Back in the early days, I feel as though I have to mention this, but we used to have Eamon Dunphy on regularly on a Monday night. Lively show, shall we say. But he was great with me, and that's one thing that I always kind of remember. I would have been kind of very much starting off in the punditry world, if you like, but he was really, really good to me and had a lot of respect. I suppose I earned his respect, really, but he was very, very nice to me and very good. But we kind of made this joke one night on air with him, and we ended up winning the bet, more or less. It was around the time Leicester City won the league, and that he would bring us all to Shanahan's if we won, which we did, thankfully. So myself, Hugh, Gary and Andrew got brought to Shannon's on Eamon, and it was unbelievable, and we leave it there.
Shane, I'm going to give your highlight away. It has to be Shells, Damien Duff, go on.
Yeah. Well, that's just my highlight of my life. being able to, not only that, but being able to talk in a professional capacity of the league running as well and building up. The two Johnnies were on 2FM at the time as well. We used to do a bit of a handover beforehand. And they had no League of Ireland knowledge. Even they weren't Thurlestown fans back then.
We have to convert them as well.
They were converting. They were hooked about it. I was like, how are we getting on? What's the story? How is it going? Being able to just follow that every day, the twists and turns of it, yourself on a Friday and Monday in the preview and review was absolutely brilliant. And for Shells to be crowned League of Ireland champions, considering all that's gone through in that club in the last few years, being stuck in the First Division for so many years, it was really special. And saving Talca Park as well. This week, a 250-year lease agreed for the future of Talca Park, and so many people put their heart and soul and so many hours into that campaign and that process. So, and I've said it before, Ruby, I think the Talca Park actually trumps Shell's league title win. That's the football side of things, but ensuring a football stadium, a community hub for future generations of boys and girls to be able to to feel that and to be involved in that. So,
did Ruby find? Can I just ask Ruby there, because Marie mentioned about the fact how, I suppose, your sport brought Marie a different perspective on the racing, and I doubt, Ruby, like for your brilliant knowledge of all the sports. But were you surprised by maybe the League of Ireland world that you might not have known about, which has kind of taken off?
I had to work harder on the League of Ireland because, it wasn't. I watched soccer, I watched the English Premier League, so I would have had to have learned a lot more about the League of Ireland to do this job. But this show was easy for me because I got to talk to Peter Canavan about football, to you about soccer, to Niall Moran about hurling, to Paul McGinley about golf. And I could have a general conversation because Marie or Shane always had my back from a journalistic point of view. So I just got to sit as the spare presenter and ask questions out of answers they had given. So like, I was just having a chat, like a fella sitting in the pub. I could sit down here, Marie and Shane had the work done from a journalistic point of view, and I just got to have a conversation, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, guys. Thanks a million.
Oh, thank you. Brilliant. Thank you.
Now, for anyone who's wondering about Ruby, that's what he's really like. He's a bit softy.
He was slagging me about being emotional.
on that emotional note, a great show. I'll listen most days over the years. John O'Rourke, Philadelphia. All the best. Wow. We do have to get the competition winner, €400. Who had the most representatives on this year's hurling team of the year? The answer was, of course, Tipperary with 7. And our competition winner is Colin McCann. Oh, lads, you're making me cry. Love you guys. Annette, again, from Donegal. Such a shame. I've learned so much. I was just a Premier League fan. I've found it a sporting lodge because of you guys. Can't believe the show has gone. From Nikki in Athlone.
And we have to give all of the great team a mention as well, particularly Ronan, who has been slogging away every day for the last, I don't know how many years, but quite a lot. And Laura Lee as well, who's brilliant as well and helped us.
And
all
JJ was a BCO in the early days. Give JJ a good mention.
Yeah. Today's broadcast coordinator, Jarla Holland. You mentioned Laura Lee, JJ.
No. You have to be late for the news. We've annoyed them for years now. We can't go out on the last show on time for the news.
We apologise to the news desk and the DTU Car with the official chart show coming up. You mentioned Ronan Lawler, series producer. So many producers throughout the years. Andrew O'Connor, John Farrell, Damon O'Mara, Gary Moore, and Adrian Eames, Greg Allen, Barry O'Neill, to name but a few. All of our contributors, anyone who sat in the chair for an interview over the years. But above all else, thank you, the listener. Wherever in the world you were tuning in from, on the way to a match or training, stuck in traffic, sitting at home, finishing work, catching up on the podcast, thank you for your company. Thank you for engaging. Thank you for sticking with us on our journey. Radio would not survive without its loyal and dedicated listenership. We hope you've enjoyed the show. 12 years is not a bad innings for any radio show on national radio, and there is so much more to come. You will still get your nightly sports fix with the brilliant Marie Crowe and Jackie Hurley. Inside Sport begins next Monday on RTÉ Radio 1 at 6 p.m. A different frequency, but the same passion for sport provided. So for one last time, from all of the Game On team, Alan, Marie, Ruby, who wants the last word? Your name around the credits.
Give it to Alan.
Well, no, sorry, his fader's going down. He's spoken enough now.
It's very straightforward, Shane. The last word is Marie's.
Wow, okay. Well, all I want to say is thanks everybody for their company. Thanks for listening. We're not done yet. We have a long careers ahead of us, so who knows when we'll be back together again. But it's been brilliant. It's been a great inning. So many people helped to make Game On what it is, and who knows what the future holds.
Okay. Marie Crone, Jackie, Inside Sport, Radio 1 at 6. All the best, Ruby, Al, Marie. Bye-bye. This is 2FM.